scotch. There. Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm delighted to see this many people come at this early hour, and it's raining and all that, so that's why we chose that topic. I'm really going to talk about resentments, but I thought if you were going to find out you were more humble than you thought, you would come to the early meetings. I hate to... Just kidding. This is my favorite part of AA, is not telling my story, but talking about either the history of AA or some of the principles or whatever it is. Because it gives me a chance to share what's been passed on to me with the newer people. And I hope that you find it helpful, because trying to make the transition from the material world to the spiritual world is not easy. I mean, there's all kinds of different guidelines that are used in business than are used over in our spiritual world. And the topic this morning certainly is one of the least understood. There's two things in AA that I think are underused and just not appreciated enough. Humility is one, and forgiveness is the other. It's amazing how long we hold on to things without forgiving them. It's almost like we wouldn't be ourselves unless we had these people that we still hate and or whatever it is. And part of us knows we should let them off the hook because we'd feel a lot better, but it was so outrageous what they did that we just keep holding on to it. And but that's a topic for another day. Let me just start with a story. I go to a noon meeting at a club called Yana, You Are Not Alone. And I go probably three times a week. And it's a fun meeting. They get about 70 people. It's a discussion meeting. And I enjoy it very much. I've been going there for a lot of years. And one day I was standing out in front. The meeting hadn't started yet. And there were 8 or 10 people out in the front yard, and then the parking lot had a lot of people, and I was getting out of my car across the street, and somebody's walking down the street and asked me, what's this, what are these people, what is this? So I decided I wouldn't break anybody's anonymity by saying, this is an AA club, and all those people that you see here are alcoholics. And this one guy was watching me when I was talking to this lady. So I came up with what I thought was a perfectly good parallel explanation. And I said, this is a group of people who can't make it through life on their own. And when I went over and told the guy what I said, he said, I'd rather you identify me as an alcoholic. Yeah, we don't want to get rid of that self-sufficiency and be thought of as people who can't make it through life successfully on their own. And so it takes a while for that to sink in, that you aren't going to make it through. As an alcoholic, you're not going to make it through successfully on your own. And you begrudgingly decide to accept help with your alcohol problem. And that's all. I'll handle the others on my own. It's clear that I'm powerless over alcohol, so yes, if you want to help me with that, that's fine. And then if you have a sponsor like I do, they're sticking their nose in your business and other areas. And they're going, no, I don't think that's what you should do. This is what you should do. And you start getting that resentment about, well, who the hell's in charge of my life? It's my life. Why should somebody else be telling me? So you can see that there's a lot of resistance to giving up control. And of course, humility is the desire to seek and do God's will, which means we want to turn it over. We're going to give up control, but not yet. And Bill writes that in the 12 and 12, that humility has a hard time of it in our world. It's not used very often in the business world by a Buick. People think you're humble. As a matter of fact, if someone calls you humble, you're insulted. I'm not a wimp. And so it's misunderstood and disliked. What is liked, however, is pride. The pride in building the best car, the pride of scientists, as Bill writes, forcing nature to disclose her secrets. Man is on the way to understanding and conquering everything, and we ought to be proud of that, and we're glad that we're part of it, blah, blah, blah. Now, as Bill says, we don't want to put down material achievement, but it ain't going to help an alcoholic. There were practicing alcoholics who succeeded very well and were dying of alcoholism. And it made it even harder for them to understand surrender. I got my big house. I got all these people working for me. And you want me to admit that I can't manage my life. I can't live successfully. And I go, well, the doctor gave you a year to live. I was just, you know, let's throw that in the equation. Your family doesn't speak to you. You don't sleep at night. I wouldn't call that successful. Well, those are minor points. We can get to them later. So you can see how we can fight the idea that we need a lot of help. I remember the feeling. Well, we end up taking it, don't we? We end up getting a big book and reading it. We end up going to meetings. We end up getting a sponsor. We end up praying. We end up doing a lot of things that represent an admission that we can't make it through without doing these things. That's the beginning. You suddenly realize, I better keep doing these things because it's working. And so that's the basis of whether a person is humble or not. It's not that you are judged humble. You don't say, yeah, I feel very humble. That's up to God to decide. But you find humility a wonderful tool to use, and it's part of your life all the time. It's a mindset and it is a practice. And the practice is to try and always be receiving help. When we have anniversaries, generally they go, how many years and how did you do it? I don't know, do you all do something like that up here? And then, well, I did it with my sponsor, I did it. And I think about 20 years ago, my answer is, I always want to be receiving help. Not giving it, which we all do, receiving it. See, it's easy to give it. Oh, come on, son, I'll sit down, I'll talk to you. Yes, I'll be glad to do that. But when are we going to be on the receiving end? And wow, being on the receiving end of help is like cheating. You know what I mean? It's like being in school and you go, I don't know the answer to this. What's the answer to question three? Thank you. You know what I mean? So you got something going in your head and you just call three guys or three lady friends and go, give me your perspective on this. Wow, I never would have thought of that. Never would have thought of that. That's perfect. That fits, that's wonderful. And you can just see how simple it is, and it really does make life so much easier, and yet we refuse to do it. It takes years to make that a habit. Why? Because it's ingrained in us that we shouldn't have to ask for help. If you really were a complete person, you wouldn't need to be picking up that mousy phone, wimping away with your problems, trying to get some help. You know, that's what the ego tries to tell us with our pride. And Bill writes, I noticed this for the first time. Do you ever, every so often, I didn't see him until I had about 20 years, but they were around before. It's a list of what are the principles behind each step. You ever see those things, you know, the principle behind this is surrender, the principle behind blah, 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 blah. The problem is if you go online, you find there was one developed in Cincinnati, there was one developed in Akron, there was one developed, and they're not the same. The only one they all agree on is seven is humility, but other than that, but anyway, it's fun to be able to espouse and know which principle it is. And yet in the 12 and 12, Bill writes, that the founding principle behind all steps is humility. Every one of our steps is designed to make us less self-sufficient and more God-dependent. That's the journey from step one all the way through. And that's what humility is. It is getting rid of self-sufficiency and becoming totally dependent on, and of course in the beginning, it's our sponsor, our friends, our home group, and then as we make progress spiritually, it becomes our higher power, whatever our sense of that is. So you can see that if someone has a sponsor, if someone is reading the big book, if someone does have the 24-hour-day book, reads it every morning, if someone does say prayers in the morning and at night, these are all acts of humility. If you go to meetings, if you go to conferences, they're all a statement, whether you want to make it or not. Yes, I enjoy it, but I also need it. I need it. That's a real AA member, is someone who needs the program because they understand humility. Yes, it's fun. Yes, I've been here a long time. Yes, I probably could get along for a while without AA and any of this stuff, but way down deep, I'm here because I need it. And that's important to make sure that that's part of your identity. You're here because I need it. Now you're in the crowd, you're the same as everybody else. Otherwise, you're here for a while till you get the hang of it. And I'll take over, and you know how that happens. And you've all sponsored people who did that. And the horrible thing about, if you've been around a while, and I see it happen when people get transferred in a job sometimes. And when they arrive at the new job, they're just swamped with indoctrination, and they got this, and they don't get to a meeting for a while, which is understandable. It's just, now they want me to do this, now they want me to do that. So let's say 3 weeks goes by, and here is the killer. You're sitting at home, and you say, you know, I feel just as good as if I was going to meetings. Wonder what that's all about. Oh, boy. We just gave an alcoholic something really juicy to think about, right? How could I feel just as good without meetings as I do with meetings? I wonder what that means. Maybe I should call my sponsor back. No, let me think about it some more. This is intriguing. Suddenly you're all excited about this one. And your ego is very excited because he may be in charge soon. And you say, well, let's just let it go a little longer and we'll kind of keep track of it. And you haven't been praying in the morning. Let's leave that alone and just see. I wonder what this is. You get about 3 months of feeling just as good as you did with meetings and prayer and talking to other people. You're going to be entertaining the idea that you're a former alcoholic. Jeez, isn't this amazing? Wow. I'm not going to drink, but I really don't need to join any groups here. And pretty soon you're at some event and somebody said you want a little champagne and you go, okay. And then, of course, we all know what happens then. Bam. And when people tell their story, they say, it was just amazing. It happened because things were too good. Too good. If we felt frightened and all upset and couldn't sleep, we would have gone to a meeting very quickly. So the disease is a very sneaky, cunning, baffling, powerful. And the way it traps us is by making us feel better than we expected. And I'll tell you, you know where else that occurred in my life? When I was flying. One of the things that is very dangerous is if the oxygen were to shut off, you wouldn't have any indication unless you were watching the blinker, which you aren't because you're flying the plane. There's a warning signal that you're not getting any oxygen. And in order to teach it, they take you to a low pressure chamber and they take you up and then they pull the oxygen mask off and you see what happens. The danger signal is that you feel better than you did a few minutes ago. That's a hard thing to detect. I suddenly feel better than I did 3 minutes ago. Uh-oh, trouble. So the same thing with not going to meetings or with this and that, you're feeling better. That's a real, something ought to be looked into. And if you get that feeling, then you have to pull the emergency thing or come down to lower altitude. But it reminded me of the same thing. What an unusual warning signal. I feel better than I did. But it saved a lot of people's lives. I can still remember another guy, they let him go till he passed out. And he was to have a deck of cards and just turn them and tell what card it was. So he starts out and he goes, Queen of Spades, Jack of Diamonds, 10 o'clock. Boom. It was. So, boy, when you saw that, it was visual proof of they weren't fooling. So I don't know if we could apply that to ourselves, but that's certainly a similar thing, is that I shouldn't be feeling this good not going to meetings and not doing all these things that I've been doing all these years. That's a danger signal. Let's go make a big priority. And what am I making a priority of? I'm going to go back to accepting help on a regular basis. It's not that I'm going to go back and sponsor someone and that'll make me feel better. That does make you feel better. But it has to be that I'm there because I need it. Otherwise, we have nothing to do with humility. We are just there on a prideful basis. I'm here to help others. Don't need help myself, but I'm here to help others. So when you look in your own life and see all the things that you do on a regular basis to make sure you are well taken care of spiritually, Each one of those is an act of humility. And the reason I'm bringing it up is Bill writes that humility has a hard time of it in society. I think it has a hard time of it in AA because there's those people who run around going, if you say you're humble, you're not. Ha, ha, ha. And that's, so people who hear that, they're afraid to even say the word because somebody's going to call a 15-yard penalty on their sobriety. And it shouldn't be called. We should feel perfectly comfortable about discussing how powerful the concept of humility is and how much we love it in our lives and want to practice it more. We can't measure how humble we are. That's not anything we can do. As a matter of fact, one of the aspects of humility is that you don't compare anything. So if you're using humility, you would never say, my home group is the best home group in the world, and if you don't feel that way about your home group, you ought to get another home group. That's a prideful statement. It has nothing to do with humility. Mine is the best. Why is it the best? Because I go there. That's why. That's why it's the best. What do you think? I was in the Marine Corps when I looked at my sponsor, and he was also in the Marine Corps. And we started talking about humility, and I said, well, what is this? And he says, look it up in the dictionary. So I looked it up, and it said, total absence of pride. Now, you know the Marine slogan that's on television, the few, the proud, the Marines. And I'm going, total absence of pride. And then I said, what is this, a communist organization? They're trying to weaken our military? What is this total absence of pride? That was a shocker. Pride is a very powerful tool if you're going to leave God out. You can appeal to someone's pride. But that's a low-level power compared to the creator of the universe. And I remember we were kidding that no company would advertise, buy my product and you'll feel humble. I said, you just wouldn't see it in the business world. And then I remember when I was a little kid, there was a gasoline company called Humble. Some of you remember that? Humble Gas and Oil. Geez, that's kind of funny. I wondered, how the hell did they pick the name Humble? Doesn't it sound unusual that you would name your gasoline company Humble? So if you're curious, I looked it up, and Humble, Texas is just south of Houston. And there was a guy who settled there, and he had his little way of earning a living. He had a ferry boat, and he ferried people back and across whatever that river is that's just south of there. That was his job. And he bought a little piece of land, and he started complaining that They weren't delivering mail anywhere near where he lived. And the post office said, well, we'd be glad to put a post office in your house. And then people would come there to get their mail, the few neighbors that he had. And he said, okay, so in order to put it there, they had to give it the address of his name, Humble, Texas. So that's where that came from. And lo and behold, within 20 years, they found one of the biggest oil discoveries anywhere on his property. And so it was the Humble oil thing and all of that. So it wasn't some executive sitting around going, you know, Humble will draw a lot of customers in. And it'll really help our business. And I forgot who they merged with, Shell or somebody like that. But so once again, the word itself was not used because it's misunderstood. It's just the antithesis of our whole society. Humility. I'm here because I need help. Where is it safe to say that? Except in AA or in church. It's a very honest statement. I think everybody knows they need help, but they're certainly not going to say it because of pride and because of what other people might think of them. Oh, needs help. You know, Mary, she needs help. Probably seeing a shrink. In other words, you can see it just doesn't have the power of pride. Let me tell you what I did on my own. Put myself through school, put myself through graduate school, started my own company, got my own private jet. Anybody help you? No. Did it all myself. Did the whole thing myself. It's just amazing. So humility fits in with, I think everybody in the room can see that you really are practicing humility all throughout the day. You really are. I mean, if you're at work and you have a problem and you call your sponsor, that is a huge act of humility. And so we are safe to say, each of us, that the practice of humility means a lot to me and I get tremendous rewards from it. And that's a big difference than saying, I've decided I'm the most humble person in the room, which can't be judged by any of us. You know, the most sober person. Who's the most sober? The one that got up the earliest. I don't know if I agree with that. The reason is I never get up early. That's why. So this package of coming up against humility, not against it, but of coming up and dealing with it comes right in the middle of our program. Right after we've done a fifth step, which took a lot of humility to write down what was wrong with me, not what was wrong with the world, which was our old style. Why are you unhappy? Well, I'll tell you why. My aunt did this, my wife does that, my boss is a jerk. So we only inventoried out there. And then they said, well, if you really want to make progress and get happy, we're going to inventory in the opposite direction. And our pride said, that's not where the problem is, for God's sakes. I've been watching this for 20 years. It's my wife. It's clear. But we got nowhere else to go, and besides, everybody else did it. That was the clincher. I had a friend who came in. I said, he'll never take this step, I know. And he was ahead of me. He finished it. And he's telling me it's wonderful, steps 4 and 5. And so I ended up doing that, and then I realized, wow, that's amazing. If I focus on what is, I am seeing this wrong, generally it's a question of perception. I really don't see the situation correctly, so I react in a certain way. If I place all the discovery inside of me, I can change and the problem can be solved right away. If it's out there, there's 10 other people that have to change before I have a chance at being happy. And they don't listen. What do you want me to do? Oh, no, the hell with that. So it gave us the power. The whole program keeps giving us the power to live with peace of mind and happiness. And when Bill gets to step seven, he talks about not we need humility just to stay sober, and we have no chance of any happiness or peace of mind unless this is the cornerstone for it. And it's a continual attack on self-sufficiency, which wants to raise its hand constantly. It just wants to go, okay. The next step is make a list of the people that you harmed and get ready to make amends, and then go out and make amends. Do you want some advice on how to do this, or are you going to do it on your own? I'll do it on my own. I know how to do that. Okay. So where does a guy go immediately on the amend? I'm going to go see my former girlfriend and make amends. She'll probably take me back when she sees me making amends. Turns into a nightmare. Would you like some help now on doing that? So you've all experienced this. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Oh, that's it. I'm already thinking. I got it. And of course, it's just common advice now when you're getting ready to do steps 8 and 9, do it with your sponsor. Let him set the time. No, it's too soon. Don't go over there, write a letter, whatever. And you get ideas that are much better than the ones you thought of. That's a hard thing to admit, that someone else would have better ideas about your life than you do. You know yourself better than anyone. You've been with you for a long time. You've been hanging around. So who would know what would be best for you better than you? The answer is almost everyone. But it takes a while to admit that, right? We have to fail a number of times until we finally go, yeah, maybe I'll call somebody up and see what they think about it. And even when we make the phone call, do you remember making these in the early sobriety? Hey, Fred, yeah, a friend of mine is curious. He's thinking of leaving his wife, a friend of mine. Can't even admit that it's me that wants to know. So the steps come in, and I think they're brilliant. I am one of the people who prefers to use both of our books. That's the funniest thing. There's places where you just use the big book. We don't like the 12 and 12. And it's carried on from somebody who got sober back in the 50s when Bill wrote the 12 and 12. We don't need it. We're doing fine with the big book. And they told their sponsees, you don't need the 12 and 12. So they told the people they sponsor, and they told the people they sponsor. And there are places where you just can't mention the book for fear of someone going, we don't talk about that here. Well, I'll be damned if I wasn't at some convention and the speaker got up and said, in my group, we only use the 12 and 12. And I went, suddenly I'm in the role that I'm complaining, about the big book people. I'm going, what? He was very happy and had 25 years. That shouldn't have happened. And then he said, you want to take an inventory. You take an inventory in step 4 in the 12 and 12. There must be 100 questions you have to answer. You remember how they are in the 4th step and the 12th step? It's just, what about this? What about that? What about that? And you write the question, and then you have to write an answer to it. So my hat's off to those people, but it showed I'm criticizing people who don't appreciate the 12 and 12. The guy gets up and says they don't use the big book, and immediately I judge that group as wrong. But anyway, the 12 and 12 has such There are steps in there that are far better than the big book, and the big book has steps that, this is just my own opinion, the explanation is just so wonderful, and then there's steps where they both are just out of the ballpark. Step 10 in both books is just brilliant. How could you have a better beginning to step one than who cares to admit complete defeat? Right out, you know, that's the opening line. Who cares to admit complete defeat? And it's like nobody. So it's, anyway, I'm just expressing my preferences. And the big book doesn't have much on 6 and 7. Are you ready? Say this prayer. And I think when Bill got around to, 10 years later, thinking about those, he suddenly realized this is the step that separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls. This is big stuff. This is huge. And then you talk to a lot of old timers, you ask them what they're doing, they go 6 and 7. 6 and 7, 6 and 7, 6 and 7. Chuck Chamberlain, I can remember, he even says it on some talks. His favorite thing is to find out something else he's wrong about so he can get rid of it. He just loves it. And some guy goes, no, Chuck, I think you're wrong. It could be this. And he goes, oh, my God. He almost wants to go over and give the guy a hug because now he can throw away something that is wrong. There's no ego involved. There's just gratitude. I've got rid of that because that doesn't fit in spiritually with this new idea. I think the reason that these, and now I'm sort of getting talking about the steps, which is where you know the topic came from. If there's one place that the 12 and 12 is different than the big book, I am amazed how consistent Bill Wilson was. I defy you to find some place in the big book that's at odds with some other place in the big book. You know what I'm talking about? Where he says something in more about alcoholism, and then when we get up to the last chapter, here's a little sentence that's at odds with the sentence in there. It is incredibly consistent. And the same thing with the 12 and 12 and the big book, with one exception that I've found. There's probably others, but this is the one. Does anybody want to guess? Anybody know what it is? Okay. In the sixth step, in the 12 and 12, he says, having been granted a perfect release from alcoholism, he's trying to explain why becoming entirely ready is the key to having character defects removed. And the only reason they're still around is that you haven't become entirely ready like you were entirely ready to get rid of the drinking. We were all entirely ready to get rid of that. So he says, having been granted a perfect release, why can't we have the same readiness on our other character defects? Why are they still around? You're sitting there with absolute proof that 6 and 7 work on the biggest problem you ever had. Why have you got all the other ones? Why don't you get rid of them just like you did your drinking? I haven't thought about drinking since 1965. It just doesn't come up. It's gone. It was removed. It's disappeared. What about all my other characters? Do I think about sex? Yes. Do I think about greed? Do I think about this? Yeah. Oh, they're not gone yet? Well, what's wrong with you? Why have you still got them? And then he says, we have to raise our eyes towards perfection. We have to start aiming at perfection. And it's in there 3 times in the sixth step, in the 12 and 12, and of course in the big book, progress, not perfection. And here we're going, no, I'm sorry, but the more I think about it, you've got to raise your eyes higher than you had them. Raise them up and try and get perfect releases from every character defect that you can. So there's a difference that it's not that huge, but it is definitely different. So then he discusses how difficult it is to become entirely ready. His guess as to why we can get rid of drinking and can't get rid of the other ones is drinking was killing us. The other ones aren't. They're ruining our lives. They're messing things up. They're causing us trouble. But they aren't physically killing us. So it was easier to become entirely ready. So he comes up with I just love this line. We tend to settle for as much perfection as will get us by. I run a business. I want to be known as an honest businessman. I don't want to be locked into being honest. I want to be known as an honest businessman. I want people to say, yeah, he's honest. Yeah, go deal with him. But there are times of business when you have to, I'm sorry, you got to skizzle the guy. I mean, otherwise you could go under. I mean, there's just certain situations where, you know, what do I know? What do I know? Well, you have to lie. I mean, you have to. So we've already compromised. So it's just wonderful what he said. We tend to settle for as much perfection as will get us by. And the perfection is that other people think well of us. We don't, because we know the rest of the story. But we're living on other people thinking well of us. Keep talking. Talk more about me. Oh, I'm a good mother. I'm a good... Thank you. Thank you. I need 2 more compliments and it'll offset my guilt. Oh, the games that we play. Isn't that fun? I remember, I never thought gossip was a character defect. And Dr. Bob was pretty harsh about it. You remember, he was really, watch that erring member of the tongue. You can ruin other people and this and that. And so I started thinking about, gee whiz, I seem to jump in the middle of all these things, so I decided to give up gossiping. I remember that. I said, I'm going to just make it, here's something I can start with. I mean, of all the wrong things I do, this should be the easiest. To just stop. So a few years went by, and I found that I had successfully given up originating gossip. I never started a story about anyone. However, if someone on this side of the room was trying to get a message over to this side of the room, I would be like a telephone line. It would just pass through me over there, so I was a conduit for gossip, which is, that's a very neutral position to be in. Geez, I hate to repeat this about Fred, but, you know. So, you know, and why do we do that? It makes us feel superior, just for a second. Well, at least I'm not doing that. So I laugh, and there it is. That's why we make progress, but boy, to get rid of something totally is a landmark. I think after a number of years, I've probably gotten rid of 3 things, you know, and all the rest they've improved considerably. Yeah, Bill writes, we stay honest enough to stay out of jail. You know what I mean? And we just set limits, but we don't try to go all the way. Why? Because we enjoy these character defects. They bring us pleasure in a strange way. But they're blocking us from the ultimate experience, which is conscious contact with our own Creator. And I find that, I could do it tonight, but I think I'll do it now, our society, I came in 1964, and the country was different. You know, in 1964, you could say, oh yeah, this is a Christian country, but we're tolerant of all religions. We want everybody to be happy here. You can't say that today. That just, no. When AA was founded, Darwin had started his theory of evolution, and the scientists were picking up on how much they could learn about the world and the universe. And they saw that it would be possible for science to replace religion as the ultimate authority about life and about all these things. And that was going on when AA was founded. At the same time that AA was being founded, New Age movement was coming in. Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. Your mind can control your life. How you think is how you are. So all you have to do is change your thinking, and you can, you know, there's a whole bunch of those at Unity Church. There's just, the way you think is the room. AA is not a thinking program. It's an action program. We don't change our thinking, we change our action. So you can see that we followed a different path right there, but they were both hot at the time. They were both, and fortunately the Oxford group was, it was action. You take these following steps and you can become more spiritual. The point I'm leading up to is, at the higher intellectual levels in colleges, in today's environment, science is the religion. It has totally replaced secularism and the whole thing. So when we have alcoholics, young people who have gone through that, it's harder for them to deal with the God issue than it was for us. It's just much harder. There was a gal from Harvard who was going to YANA, this club, and she had a master's degree and everything, and she said, if my classmates found out that I was talking about God, they wouldn't invite me back to the reunion. That's a lot of pressure. I didn't have any of that when I came in here. So the presentation of the term God has to be improved in AA. We have to find a way of communicating so that there's no way to object to it. And this is what I came up with. And I think all around AA we ought to try and come up with something that the fellowship could use, you know, a pamphlet on how the word God is used in AA. You can see how that said? It doesn't say what it means. It says how the word is used. So far, oh, I see. So if I have one of those new people and they say, I can't stand it when you talk about God, I say, well, I think I know what your problem is. Your problem is that you're deciding for me what I mean when I say the word, and you don't like it. That's called creating your own problem. You make up a definition that you don't like, and then you say that that's what I mean when I say it. So why don't you ask me what I mean? Well, it's okay. So I got open mind anyway. What do you mean? And I said, this is what I mean. There are several terms we could use, creator of the universe, spirit of the universe, father, whatever. But this three-letter word, God's been around for thousands of years. There were war gods and peace gods and grow the crops gods. And so anyway, it's a word that at least creates the relationship that we're trying to talk about. When I say the word God, I mean all of the spiritual experiences that I've had in AA as the result of doing the steps that I can't explain in other terms. I followed the steps, kept an open mind on them, and I was transformed into something that I couldn't even believe. And the words out of my mouth were, so this is the God they're talking about. So there is no explanation. There's no definition. There's only experience. You almost could say God as we experience him. And if you haven't had the experience, it's just a theory. But you have to have an open mind to try these to see if it would happen. Are you willing to make the experiment? And you'll be the judge if something happened. And if something happens that you can't explain, welcome to the club. And you'll be left with the trying to explain it to the next person. So I think something like that would help us with this situation that is making AA in many places less God-friendly than it used to be. I don't know if you've experienced that at groups and stuff, but I hear people say, let's not talk about God so much, scare away the newcomers, and let's not do this and that. My goodness, the whole centerpiece of Alcoholics Anonymous is that word. And everyone who has experienced that knows that this is the highest level experience that a person can have. So it's just terrible to think of cheating someone out of that because we couldn't come up with a way of explaining it, so they stayed. And so that was just my thoughts on that, because I'm sure you've been running into this, and it would be very difficult to grow up to be 18 or 20 years old today and come to AA and to jump into stuff that was comfortable for us. When I came here, I had tried the Catholic Church. My sister loved it. I hated it. It scared me. I didn't tell them a thing in confession. I knew that it was... they were going to use it against you later on. So I went... So when I got out of there, I just ran away. She stayed. It was the most comforting thing. So it's a perception thing. I sat there and I saw something scary. She sat there and saw something wonderful. And so when I first came here, I didn't want to say the Lord's Prayer. I didn't want to hear about God. I didn't want to do meditation. I didn't want to do amends. I didn't want to do this. And if AA, see, I didn't know back then that if I had said the magic word, I wouldn't have had to do any of those things. Making amends offends me. Well, you can't make him do it then, because no, you can't offend anybody. The Lord's Prayer offends me. Hearing people talk about spirituality offends me. So, boy, if I'd only known that, then the group would have said, well, then, Sandy, you don't have to pray. You don't have to do a fourth step. You don't have to make amends. And I would have died. I would have died from kindness. That's what I would have died of. Kindness. I sometimes think that, now this is just a joke, don't take it seriously. That our General Service Conference is going to decide that we need to survey Alcoholics Anonymous to find out what changes need to be made. And they're only going to survey people with 2 years or less. Because that's where the wisdom lies. Okay, that's... Sorry about that. Now, we're almost at the end of an hour, 55 minutes, and I just thought, if people feel like it, we got time for a few questions. Anybody have a question they've always wanted to ask, or want to give me a lecture on how to give a less political talk? Anybody got anything?
Somebody over here.
Yes. Yeah, that's a tough one, but I think we should just fall back on love as the answer, and to just say, I'm so glad you're doing well. It could be very disarming. Because they're expecting a lecture on, when are you coming back? You know, disaster's waiting you around the corner. They haven't drank, right?
They haven't.
Is that what you said, that they just don't go to meetings?
They don't go to meetings and they don't drink around me. All
right. Well, I thought they were sober and just weren't going to meetings, but...
No.
Yeah. If we knew the answer to this, it wouldn't be, everyone in the world would be sober. How do you, I mean, look at, we only reach, what, 10% of the alcoholics. Why? Why can't we reach further? Why can't, it just, that's the way it is. Nobody, that has been the mystery of all mysteries, is how do you show someone that their whole life could just be wonderful, and if their eyes aren't open to see it, it isn't going to happen. AA's been trying to figure that out since day one. Why do we only get 10%? Why is it? So that fits in that same thing, but thank you. Yes?
I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic.
Bill. Well, that's a great question, because Bill says clearly that our basic instincts for sex, security, and society are the cause of our troubles. But they're very necessary for survival, so you don't get rid of them. I mean, you know, this is how you form a society and you reproduce and we take care of ourselves. And so these demands are inside of us. From our point of view, without anybody teaching us anything, it was clear to us that we needed more in order to get peace of mind. If I have financial insecurity, I need more money, and then that'll go away. And then I don't feel in society, if I don't feel that I'm there yet, I'm going to have to get promoted and start a second company. But in other words, I have to increase the supply in order to meet these demands. It seemed like that was the only possible option from our perspective before we got here. And what does Bill say? In here, and it's in the sixth and seventh step, we find a way of reducing the demands. We get financial peace of mind with no money showing up. And that's what 6 and 7, it's in other words, they are showing that the one thing that can reduce the demand so that we have peace of mind with the situation is God. As long as we will give up trying to do it ourselves, that he will reduce the instinctual drives to their proper level so that we take care of ourselves and other people, but they won't be driving us nuts at night. So you asked, it was right there. It's reducing demands, which never, we couldn't do on our own, so nobody ever thinks of that. We got to get the supply increased in order, of course you never get enough. Great question. Over here. Tell you what, I was in a situation like that, and some of my guys that I played poker with, they said, unless you go to Al-Anon, we're not coming over and playing cards with you anymore. And I said, I've got 20 years, for God's sakes. What the hell can I learn there? And I said, well, we're not having the poker game anymore. Said, oh, Jesus. So I walked in there, and I noticed something wonderful. I was new. I wasn't the expert on anything. They'd come up, people would know me, and they'd come up, Sandy, can I ask you? I said, I just got here. And I heard things that just astounded me from people who were suffering and came there, and they were suffering because of an alcoholic. And they came there, and in my case, a lady came in and said her husband did blah, 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 blah. And she was crying. She was just, I thought she was going to have a nervous breakdown. And I was saying to myself, what's wrong with that? You know what I mean? That was stuff I did that I didn't have any idea was doing that kind of damage. So I learned an awful lot about my own inventory. And, of course, they teach we have to release with love. We have to let go and let God. And sometimes when you announce you're going to an Al-Anon meeting, that could change everything right there. I mean, it makes quite a statement. Very, what? What are you going over there for? I need help on how to be comfortable here. How can I have peace of mind no matter which direction you go? I want peace of mind whether you keep drinking or peace of mind if you get sober. And I think that's the place to get it. That's their specialty. And I was amazed how much wisdom they have over there. Now, don't quote me on that. Does that help at all? Okay. Because we have to reserve the right to tease Alan on, right? Okay. Yes, sir.
My name's Phil. I'm a grateful recovered
alcoholic.
For me, you know, you were talking about science and religion and spirituality. And I know I'm a bio major. I'm a very science-oriented person. But what really helped me was we did nonsense. It talks about electricity and how it came.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not grasp the reality. I'm like, just pray. Like, my first thought told me to pray to whom this concerns. And that's why I didn't know. And like, I love what you said when you
And that's great. Yeah, and there are some scientists who have written books about how science and God can coexist easily, but they are in the minority. Trust me, there's 100 other books. I remember when, and I'm just teasing science a little bit. They finally decided after the Big Bang that the probability of life existing in this universe was insufficient, and therefore it couldn't happen, because the laws of probability said after a Big Bang, life forming, it just, you know how science are, they just ruled it out. So that left the door open for God. But it was only a week later than they said, well, actually, there's billions of universes, and statistically, life on one of them is possible. So I remember saying, how convenient, you know. Okay, I think we're getting close. Anybody else? We'll wrap it up. Thank you all for your attention. I enjoyed being here.